Good afternoon, and welcome to Autogrill's full year 2018 earnings call. Joining me on the call are Gian Mario Tondato, our Group CEO, and Camillo Rossotto, our Corporate General Manager and Group CFO, who joined us last year in November. Before we get started, we want to emphasize that some of the information discussed in this call may contain forward-looking statements that involve risk and uncertainty. Actual results may differ materially from those anticipated in these statements. For a discussion of these risks and uncertainties, you should review the disclaimer in the earnings presentation we issued today. Now, we are available to take your questions. Thank you.
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. The first question is from Jaafar Mestari of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I have two questions, please. Firstly, just on the net new business in North America. On the full year 2018, it looks like you are still losing about as much new revenue as you're winning. Can you maybe talk about the different moving parts in there? I know there's some portfolio management in retail, for example. If we focus just on North America airports, how is the gross wins versus business losses, and is it still flattish or is it more markedly positive? My second question is not really a question, but please tell us everything you can tell us at this stage on your involvement in the strategic review of Areas. Really any information, please.
Let me ask you the second question. We are two listed companies, so we don't like to comment on rumors, so there are no comments on the second point. Going on the first point, I think I'll let Camillo to answer on the numbers. Generally speaking, I think, of course, every year we are losing some business and we are winning other businesses. There is a startup phase, especially if you're referring to the retail business. The acquisition don't start the first day of the year. This is a phasing in. What I see so far, generally speaking, is a very positive trend. They are looking good in terms of operations. We are integrating everything quite well. Management is in place. We're changing the management team and Patrick Drennan, that is a former World Duty Free person that used to work with us many years ago, and now he's back. Very good on the retail business in North America. I don't know, Camillo, if you want to comment on.
I think in touch with Gian Mario just said, most of what you see in the airports in 2018 versus, say, 2017 is still very much food and beverage driven. I don't think you can still appreciate the full year impact of Aviva, for example, that we consolidated starting at the end of August. For that to really make a dent in the distribution of revenues and also, quite frankly, the characteristics of the cash conversion of that business, which is more interesting from a lower level of capital perspective, you need to wait for 2019 probably. Still mostly a food and beverage business dynamic there.
Thank you.
The next question is from Nicolò Pessina of Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. I would have a few questions. First of all, can you give us an outlook for 2019 in terms of profitability and in particular, your expectations for cost trends in North America? Second question, can you give us some more color on the like-for-like growth and underlying profitability in the international division in the last few months of the year? My perception is that there was a deterioration of the growth and of the profitability there. Maybe you can give us a better view on this point. Third point, on the M&A strategy, you mentioned in the presentation bolt-on acquisitions. I wonder if a large acquisition is still an option. Also, I'd like to ask if you can give us an idea of what you'd like to achieve with a potential M&A deal. Would adding mass be enough, or would you like something more in terms of geographic and product diversification? Last question on the rationalization of non-core assets mentioned also in the presentation. I'd like to know if you refer to any specific asset. Thank you.
Sorry, Niccolò, just to check if we understood well on the M&A side. You would like to understand if we would go ahead with a piecemeal acquisition or if there is space, if there is room to do an M&A deal with a larger size. Is this the question?
Exactly. And what you would like to achieve with a potential large acquisition by a strategic point of view.
Okay, many thanks.
Yes. Starting with the outlook for 2019, as you know, we issued a plan, a business plan 3 years ago, and we confirmed that we are in the game, you know, for 2019. So that's what we said. You know, we won't be more specific on profitability in North America or other regions, you know, or other divisions. Sorry. And what I can tell you is already in the presentation. I think the year started. 2019 started quite well, in a positive way. You know, North America is performing as we expected. International is growing as we expected, and the region that is not suffering, I would say, but more soft in terms of growth is Europe. But in Europe, as you know, we have taken a lot of initiative of restructuring, rethinking of the businesses that we think are paying off, you know, at the beginning of the year and in the rest of 2018. So that's the situation. In terms of M&A strategy, I think we are, generally speaking, what we can tell you is that we are pursuing value creation. So we look at every opportunity, and if there is an opportunity to make sense and create value, and like we did, you know, in the past, we will go after those opportunities. That's it. You know, I cannot be more specific in terms of geography or targets, because as you can imagine, you know, it's not this the situation. You know.
And Niccolò, on the international, I think you are right. I mean, we have been, I think, pretty transparent on the fact that the erosion in profitability there is a consequence of some slower takeoff of some of the openings in the Nordics and in some other parts of the world. So I think we also alluded to the fact that given the relatively small size of those operations versus the other, for example, North American, European business, it doesn't take much to impact profitability. So the team is working very hard on fixing some of these startup topics, which will be behind us by the end of this year at the latest. And therefore, we should bring it back to more of a type of airport channel exposure that we have in the U.S. in terms of prospective profitability.
Thank you.
The next question is from Simon Le Chypre of CFA. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Simon Le Chypre from MainFirst. I've got three questions, please. First of all, if you could please provide us with an update on the cross-generational deal in Italy. Can you confirm your expectations of 7 to 8 million euros of savings you mentioned back in July? And what do you expect in terms of phasing? Second question, as a follow-up on the M&A and portfolio rationalization question. You mentioned those items to be a priority for 2019. So do we have to expect some news in the coming weeks or months? And last question, just quickly on CapEx, what do you expect for 2019?
Let me take the easy one. The cross-generational deal, yes, we are seeing that flowing through the P&L because, as we mentioned, the numbers you were quoting are pretty much what we expect to be the full-year impact in 2019, and it's pretty much of a linear type of impact as we go into the exits have been realized, and we're now working on the remixing of the labor force by introducing younger and frankly cheaper labor. That's on track. The CapEx, I think you should expect. I mean, you've seen that the free cash flow number is still pretty disappointing, and that's a function of clearly both of EBITDA and CapEx, which reflects the 16 and 17 wins in the motorways and renewal programs, both concerning the New Jersey Turnpike and some French and Italian motorways. And so that will still be with us for 2019. You should expect to see a reduction from the historically high levels at which we're currently traveling, starting with, I think, 2020. And long-term, I think 5% is a better number than 6%, but before we get there, we should probably see a piece of a hump in 2019. On the M&A, quite frankly, your question was whether you should expect in weeks or months any news from us. I think you will see when that happens, but not something that we would comment on at this stage.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Niccolò Pessina of Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks. A quick follow-up. I was wondering if you can make any comment on the competitive environment for new contracts in the U.S. and international airports. How is it evolving and how Automobile is performing in such environment? Second point, U.S. motorways were somehow a headwind in 2018. I wonder if anything is changing, traffic trends, tastes, consumer tastes, and choices, and so on. And final question on Amazon. We read about the potential entry of Amazon into airports, but be curious to know your view if you perceive it as a threat or not. Thank you.
We read the news as well, and so I cannot. Of course, Amazon is a big machine. I don't know, but so far nothing happened. If they want to enter an airport, they have to go through the same process that all the other competitors, so they have to win a contract, to win a bid, and I don't think this is their business plan, this business plan so far, you know, but anyhow, we'll see if they do sense. And on the competitive environment, I think in the U.S., I frankly speaking, don't see a lot of changes. As I said many times before, you know, the main and stronger competitors we are the locals, more than the usual suspect that you think, you know, or we think, you know, in an international arena. And so far, I think we are winning, as you said, as you saw, you know, our chunk of business. We are going back in airports that we weren't there for almost a decade, like LaGuardia in New York. You know, it's a big achievement because we are entering really the home turf of a big competitor, actually probably the biggest competitor we are in the U.S., that is OTG, and so on, you know. and the market is growing. That's the U.S. market in the airport infrastructure is growing, so that's the good news. You know, there is, I think, we can work in a growth environment. That's really the good news. Talking about the motorways, I think the traffic is not that bad. You know, we don't have actual data, you know, in the U.S. motorways, but the traffic, my perception, our perception is that the traffic is not so bad. What is changing is the attitude of people, you know, that through apps, so they can read, for instance, whatever, when they are going through a motorway, they can read all the brands, you know, that are stores of the brands, you know, that are around the motorway. And so they can go out, you know, make the choice of stopping and going out and stopping. So it's a completely different, a little bit a different behavior of what we've seen before. You know, so if you, in a nutshell, basically in the old days, what we were providing was basically a service. You know, you stopped in the motorways business, you found the food. Now we are competing with brands. So what we are doing is rebranding and upgrading our brand portfolio, you know, also in the motorway business. And we are, frankly speaking, seeing some success on that, you know. So the introduction of new brands like Pret A Manger are performing very well, for instance, in our U.S. motorway infrastructure. So I think we have to fine-tune and to change a little bit the branding strategy in the motorway business, and I think some results are going to be there.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Alessandro Cecchini of Equita. Please go ahead.
Hello, everybody, and I have some question for you. My first question is about trading momentum. You stated about a good start of 2019. I was wondering if you think about both organic growth, organic top-line growth, and profitability. This is my first question. My second question is about the follow-up about CapEx. I think correctly that you are talking about still high CapEx in 2019, but a return to 5% on sales in 2020 is something feasible. And finally, on the North America, your exit speed in the second half is quite impressive, plus 7% year on year in terms of EBITDA. If you compare this with the first half, I was wondering about what are your expectations in terms of labor cost inflation in the U.S. for 2019, and if this exit speed of plus 7% is something sustainable for full year 19. Thank you.
Let me take care of the easy question there, the CapEx. Yes, starting from 2020, we expect to see trending down towards the 5%. So it's going to be a gliding process in 2020 to get to the 5% around 2020. Keep in mind that as we focus more on airports, that has a positive impact also on the CapEx intensity, and as we get more also retail exposure, that also should help drive to a lower CapEx level. So it's not just the function of the current contracts, but also the dynamics that we anticipate happening in the coming years. So that was for the CapEx.
Talking about the second half of the year, you know, North America, let me tell you, I think so it's a result, of course, of the traffic on one end, but on the other end is also the result of the management, frankly speaking. You know, I think we've been much more focused, and we found that we got back to what we used to do very well in the past. You know, I think so. Again, it's a complicated operation because we're talking about a lot of people, a lot of big hours, a lot of hours, you know, and many accounts. So, now I think I'm quite pleased, you know, what we achieved. Having said that, you know, I was thinking, you know, it's a little bit too stretch, you know, to assume that the second half of the year, you know, can be stretched, you know, and compared to all 2019. Also because the first half of the year and the first quarter, you know, are softer in terms of sales. You know, if you compare the two half of the years, you know, we're talking about two different really animals, you know, in terms of sales, in terms of growth, in terms of peak season. So it's a complicated situation. If I can summarize, you know, first in the first quarter you have to really to save the cost base of the business. The second quarter you start to ramp up in terms of sales. The third quarter is the big bang, and the fourth quarter is a mix of things. And so it's are really four different animals, you know, in terms of how you manage the labor and how you manage the offering. But having said that, you know, going back to the trading momentum, I think the 2019, as I can confirm, you know, as we said before, you know, it's been a good start of the year, definitely.
And talking about your labor cost inflation assumption for 2019, can you share with us your view on this?
Look, that's an headwind that's going to be with us for a while. Last year it was something like 4.5%, and we have structured our business to deal with that via the actions that Jamai was mentioning on reorganizing our the amount of hours that go into the business, looking at CNAs and some automation process. So we will continue to do that, not to mention also pricing for some of these increases. And we think that probably given the situation in North America in particular with immigration restrictions and full employment, almost that's going to be a trend that we'll need to continue to deal with also in 2019.
Okay. And finally, last question from my side. So basically, your underlying tax rate for adjusted net income and underlying net income is 21%. Pretty low. Is something do you wanted to think about? So you spoke about 25% or underlying tax rate. This year is lower. Could you argument a little bit on this? Thank you.
Look, I think in terms of average effective tax rate, 25% is a good proxy. I think now you're getting more into technical issues with the theoretical one, assuming tax losses and all of that. So group level consolidated, 25% is a good number.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Ali Naqvi of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, just a few questions for myself. Could you talk about the other cost pressures in the group and just in terms of food and royalty, how those are trending for 2019? And also in terms of the airport environment, we've seen more operators, particularly in convenience, start to make quite strong like-for-like growth from food and beverage items. I'm just wondering how you see that as an industry trend going forward.
Ali, sorry to interrupt you, but the quality of the line is very bad. Can you please repeat the question? Otherwise, you can send it to me and I will repeat
Hi.
It.
Is that better? Hello? Is that better?
Maybe.
I will send an email. I'll send an email.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it because it's very choppy.
The next question is from Alberto Cecchinato of Fidentiis. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening. I have two questions, please. The first one is about U.S. convenience retail. You said previously that retail is capital return enhancing for you. So is it fair to assume that convenience has a better free cash flow conversion and return on capital compared to food and beverage in the U.S. airport channel? And the second one is... If we exclude the biggest two players in the business of U.S. convenience retail, what is the value of the market that you can realistically target with piecemeal acquisition in the U.S. convenience retail business? The last one is about the rationalization of non-core activities. Is it fair to assume that when you talk about rationalizing, that would result in a higher share of revenues coming from the airport channel at the end of it? Thank you.
Excuse me, can you repeat the third question, please?
Yes. You mentioned in the presentation that you want to rationalize non-core activities. I was wondering if this rationalization process would result in a portfolio that is more skewed towards the airport channel rather than the other two.
So, no, answer to the first question. But we are thinking we have marginal operations, you know, small operations in regions that don't grow or don't show the opportunity of an important market share. You know, that are still very valuable, but you know, probably is not what we should invest our time, you know, and our management skill set. You know, so I think there is an opportunity to streamline and to reorganize our portfolio. You know, we're talking about a lot of small things, you know, here and there. So I think that's one thing that we're working on, and it's going to be really a good thing for the management. The first thing is theoretically, of course, the free cash flow, the cash conversion of the retail business is better than the food and beverage, because generally speaking, if you don't pay too much rent, you know, because the capex intensity of the retail is different. On the other hand, you know, it's also, if you take a look, you know, the normal convenience store that you find in an airport, you know, probably 10 years ago they were selling 10% of the F&B, you know, confectionery and more books, more music, stuff like that. You know, now probably if you look at the placement of the product is 40% is probably the right number for the food and beverage. On the other hand, you know, the retail business to me is more flexible. So in the other hand, you know, you can change the product, you can change the mix, you know, just changing the product that you are selling. You know, while if you have to change, you know, from one food to another, you know, of course you need to invest more capital. So. And last but not least, even probably the most important thing, you know, due to the market share in the F&B that they are selling, you know, in their stores, you know, they're becoming a sort of competitor, or at least overlapping with us. Why do we think it's a different market? Because, you know, when you bid for a retail, it's a completely different process than bidding for a food and beverage operation, you know, in an airport. So it's still a differentiated market. But that's the reason also why we think it's an interesting sector. We are, as you said, the third. I think you were mentioning our presence in the U.S. Of course, we have a plan. We have ideas on where we want to go, you know, in terms of market share. But as you can appreciate, I cannot tell you on a conference call where we're going to go. But you have to be patient. You're going to see where we are able to arrive. Yeah. The other thing is that it's a very fragmented market in North America. If you take the two big players there, we are probably already the third, you know, and the rest, if you go to the fourth, you know, we're talking about probably one quarter of our size. So it's a good market for M&A, if you know the market.
Great, sorry. Thank you.
Sorry, before going ahead with the other questions, I will read the questions from Ali Naqvi that I received via email. So cost pressure for 2019 compared to 2018, food and royalty costs going forward. Then the second question is airport channel. Convenience operators are adding more F&B lines. How do you see that impacting your business, and how much of that is a headwind for the industry? The third question is a target net debt to EBITDA ratio. If you would do a deal, how far would you push leverage for the group?
Let's start with the last one. I think directionally we would always try, and of course all I'm saying is ex any IFRS 16 reclass, so it's pure net debt the way we know it. I think we would like to be thinking of ourselves always in an investment-grade territory, which probably, depending on where you want to put that, given the sector and the size and all of that, it's in the maximum of a 3x EBITDA on a pro forma basis for whatever acquisition we would end up looking at.
About the cost, the first question, the convenience adding more F&B, I think I answered probably with the question before. You know, if you need more explanation, just send us an email back. But I think, you know, that there is an overlapping. Of course, we don't see a real cannibalization, but because also it's a different market, but for sure, you know, we are selling more F&B. That's a fact. You know. So, and talking about the cost pressure, you know, if you talk about the food, you know, the only pressure that we have is real pressure that we have so far is the Starbucks integration with the food business, you know, because before we used to produce our food by ourselves, you know. So now some of the, not all the food, you know, in the U.S., but part of the F&B, you know, is provided by them. So there is a difference, of course, cost of goods sold. And talking about the royalties, frankly speaking, what I see now, I don't see an increase in royalties. What I see is more a mix changing in the mix of the brands, you know. Again, stretching the point, what we can say is that, you know, there are less QSR concepts and more casual dining concepts, you know. So it's changing a little bit, or probably more than a little bit, you know, the nature really of the business. So it's moving from what it used to be to a more complicated, probably, type of organization. But that's good for us, you know, because it's getting more complicated, and so we are good in doing this. Having said that, you know, going back to the Starbucks thing, you know, even if there is this increase of cost of goods sold, you know, on the Starbucks product, you know, our COGS is in 2018, sorry, is negative, so it's going down basically, so it's positive for us. And so it's a proof that we can manage this.
Okay, now we can go ahead with the other questions. Thank you.
The next question is from Luca Bacoccoli of Banca IMI. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Just two questions from my side. The first one is on your midterm ambition, which were pointing to $0.52 earnings per share for 2019. So I was wondering if you are confirming that target once updated for the FX. And the second one is on the impact from the IFRS 16 accounting principle in terms of probably higher net debt, or sorry, net debt and the on the D&A P&L line. Thank you.
Okay, let me start on the IFRS 16, Luca. The group will adopt the retrospective modified approach, which means that as far as the accounts for 2018 are concerned, you will see nothing, no restatement, and no asset or liability at the end of the year, because that right of use asset will be created effectively on the 1st of January 2019. And we will provide, as we get to the publishing of the financial statements for 2018, an indication of what that discounted liability, which is the same amount of the asset, it's going to be with a relatively small range. So you just got to be patient for that. It's coming up. And we think that for 2019, for purposes of investors in terms of management and also
whatever stakeholders, external reporting purposes, will keep a dual track to continue with the old metrics as if their accounting principle had not been implemented, which will make it easier for everybody to kind of glide from the old concept to the new one. And then I think you've seen we have announced this Capital Markets Day. In that occasion, or prior to that, we will be clear on what are the key metrics that we think management and external reporting should be focusing on, because after that principle is implemented, some of the good old measures like EBITDA, etc., take a different perspective. So we will be clear as the year progresses on that, but this is what we do for now.
Okay.
Last question, sorry. Yes, de facto, as Mario mentioned, both in the video and as we have indicated, we feel that both the start of the year and the perspective of the business continue to make the guidance relevant.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, if you have a question, please press star then one. There is no question at the moment. The next question is a follow-up from Alessandro Cecchini of Equita.
Hello, thank you for taking my last question. It's about international. So do you expect that the negative effects that you had in 2018, lowering margins importantly, do you think that still in already in 2019 you will see a pickup in profitability, or we need to wait a little bit longer? Thank you.
Our indication is that 2019 will see good growth, but still the same type of profitability of 2018, as it will take some time for the startup phase issues to be over, and that's what we are currently working on fixing for 2019. But we think that they will be going back to an historical profitability by 2020.
Okay. Okay. Many thanks.
You're welcome.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Lorenzo Rivadene for any closing remarks.
Thank you, everybody, for joining the call. If you have additional questions to ask, feel free to call me afterwards. Thank you. Have a good evening.